be fine. Just go with Agnes.
I promise I won't bite. Mm.
I actually did bite a kid once.
Hello and welcome to Beers and Banter with Mike and Colin, the show where two longtime friends get together to enjoy adult beverages and talk nonsense about the stuff they love. This week we're talking WandaVision. Now, a couple bits of housekeeping before we get started. First, this is a deep dive, so consider this your spoiler warning. And second, ostensibly this is an adult show fueled by adult beverages, and there's going to be plenty of adult language, so earmuffs for all the little Padawans out there. How you doing, Mike?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It is hot.
It is definitely warm.
Where we live in British Columbia, Canada, yeah. It's something I think that the world has discovered is all of a sudden it was like the hottest place in the world, which is really, it was unique for us.
Yeah.
So we were going through that recently.
Drinking lots of cold beer to mm-hmm. combat.
Drinking.
Temperatures down.
Drinking lots of cold beer. So, I mean, that's the nice thing is we got the solution to the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, we did just fine, but at this stage in the podcast, I mean, we've been doing this for a while now. We have a few out in the world. I wanted to take a sec to just kind of acknowledge a couple things that, okay. Like, you know, we've got some stats back, and I've noticed that we have some people listening in France, listening in Germany, yep. listening in Iowa. Like, we're not big yet. I mean, but we have an international audience, and that's very cool.
Yeah. So even if it's just two people.
Even if it's just two people.
It's still international.
I'm like, hey,
that's across the ocean.
Yeah, you found us somehow. So I mean, like, I kind of wanted to take a sec to acknowledge that, say thank you. Hopefully you're enjoying the content, you know. Merci beaucoup, danke, and thanks. You know, like, cause it's very cool. It's yeah. very cool. Like, it's kind of the reason why I think we did this. We started yeah. in the first place, to reach people in that way.
Yeah, hopefully connect with people that think the same way we do.
Mm-hmm. Nerds who love to drink beer, basically.
Yeah, that's pretty much.
Yeah.
It's a good description.
Yeah. I'm amped for today because it's a bit of an intellectual enterprise.
Yep.
Doing WandaVision. Lots to say.
Yeah.
Lots to say. This one, there might be some work to do. This one, but
I hope you're ready to listen. But anyways.
Yeah, we got a beer to get through, though.
Like usual, let's start with the beer. We're drinking a new beer today. We've never tried it before, so it's by Strange Fellows. It's called Red Haven Wild Ale with Peaches. So, what are your first thoughts?
Have you had some?
I haven't.
So have you ever had this before?
Nope, this is my first sip,
yeah,
right?
this is my, well...
You're hearing it for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
That is good.
Oh, that wow. is really good.
Mm.
That is a perfect fit for the day, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very refreshing.
Very refreshing.
Oh, I like that.
Good in
a
this
lot.
Heat, that's for sure.
Oh yeah,
it's a little tart.
A little tart.
Yeah, it's not a sour ale, but it's definitely tart.
Not a sour. What is
well,
it?
Well, I mean, maybe it's a sour ale, but it's not like overly sour.
No, yeah.
So,
but it has that tartness, like a
yeah.
sour.
Yeah,
I've definitely had sours that were quote unquote sours that were not that sour.
Yeah. It's definitely has that sour flavor, but it's not a sour beer like a you know a Warhead or something.
Yeah, but it has a real softness to it, though. I also
very
like.
Nice. Well, those Red Haven peaches.
Mm, you do taste the peach quite a bit.
Quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I say this all the time, but we're incredibly spoiled yeah. where we live in the Lower Mainland.
Oh, yeah.
In British Columbia for beer, so it's like... But the red is the theme this week.
The red is the theme. Hang on one second. I wanted to surprise you with this.
Oh.
What do you think the percent is on this, Colin, just by tasting it?
I will have to do a retest.
.7% Well, that's a pretty good guess. Pretty good guess. It's 8.3.
What?
Yeah. Doesn't that blow your
no.
mind?
No.
Yeah. This goes down super smooth.
No way.
Yeah.
I thought I was, you know, like, You remember playing like The Price is Right, the range game?
Yep.
When you were a kid?
Yep.
I was thinking in my mind, the range game, I'm like, okay, well, this could be a 5% beer.
Yeah, and you were like, I'm going to go higher.
This could be 5% ABV.
Because he's asking me, so it must
but
be
I'm
higher.
Like, but the reason he's asking is probably because it's a serious.
Yep.
And I'm like, 6.7 or 7%. 8.3%.
Yeah.
And so, no joke.
It's a real troublemaker. So it's really appropriate for today.
Oh, man.
Troublemaker.
Chaos bringer. This beer's a, yeah, it's a yep. chaos bringer.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like our girl Wanda Maximoff. Yeah. Because we, this is one I've actually really been looking forward to because more than almost anything that we've done, this is a show of ideas.
Yep.
There's a lot of heady things. Hefty ideas in the show. So we might get out there a little bit, you know, out in the weeds, might get out into outer space because there's some philosophical heft here. You know, there's some psychological
and
heft.
People are turning off the pod right now.
Yeah. Like, I didn't come here to think.
Yeah.
You know, well, that's not why I'm here.
For magic.
Yeah. Well, there is magic. There is magic. So I don't know. How do you want to crack at this? I never know where to start. But once we get started, it's usually good. But we got to figure out where to start. I know where to start.
Okay.
Let's talk about the MCU space post Endgame.
Okay. That's perfect.
Yeah. I think that's a good place
to start. What I was thinking too. Okay. Yeah.
Why do you think they went with a show like this? You think to do a hard reset? Because obviously Endgame is the end of a story cycle.
Yeah, pretty
much. Not something they always planned, but...
No, well, eventually they did, but yeah.
Eventually they did. But you just told the biggest story in Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
Why not... You know, like this, because this is a left field show.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean,
very left field. And that took a lot of people by surprise, though, when it came out.
It did. Well, and I think the big thing is it wasn't supposed to be the first show by Marvel.
Was Loki coming out?
No, Falcon and the Winter Soldier was supposed to be the first release, which when you think about it, that feels like a perfect transition show, right?
Right. Because you're still
the same vein.
You're still building
yeah.
in that same world, right?
That's
like they went with the off brand, weird. Intellectual absurdist show first.
That had to do with COVID delayed the filming and stuff. So
there was it. Okay.
Yeah. The scheduling.
A logistics reason.
So they had to flip it. But Kevin Feige even said, he's like, it worked out perfect. He said, this was the perfect show to introduce the world to Marvel TV.
Yeah.
So like you said, it's a left field show. It's the reason that they made a show like this was because of Ragnarok. Right? They said it was heavily inspired by...
I'm glad you brought that up.
By the chances they took in Ragnarok and the fun, they were like, okay, since they were... That was successful.
Yeah.
We can make a show.
Because you and I mean, it was obvious when we talked Ragnarok, how much we love that movie.
Right.
And that the MCU could really lean into that kind of weirdness.
Yeah.
Provided it had a good cohesive whole, if it was well written, if there was holistic ideas. And a lot of that happens in this show.
Yes.
It's very strong and very complete in that way.
Yeah.
Right.
I think, going back to this, I think that one of the detriments to WandaVision, because I heard this a ton, was a lot of people were like, oh, I can't watch that show. I watched the first two episodes and I can't get into it. It's not a Marvel movie. It's you know, it's boring because it was like the first two episodes were very 50s, very 60s sitcom, right? And I heard so many people be like, I don't like that show. I saw the first two episodes. I can't watch it.
Well,
and I'm like, oh boy.
This is the thing. Okay. This is an instance of what I would call, and he's famous for this, is J.J. Abrams' mystery box storytelling.
Yeah.
Where it drops you in the blender. You have no idea what the fuck is going on and you have to think for yourself.
Yeah.
And to be fair, that is not a hallmark of MCU movies.
Exactly. And I think that was... It was almost a detriment to the show in that people were expecting, because they haven't had an MCU movie for so long because of COVID and stuff. There's no, you know, that people, when it came out, a lot of people were disappointed. They were like, this isn't what I was hoping for. And well, I was on the exact...
You know how people are.
I know.
They want their expectations subverted, but they wanted to subvert it in a way they want. And I'm like, that's not how these things work. You're like, hey, you changed it up on me, but I don't like how you change. Not the way I was expecting.
I wanted to change it.
Wait, what the what the fuck does that? Anyways,
my point is,
like,
I felt the exact opposite. I was drawn in with the show.
I was drawn in.
Me too.
I'm like, and I mean, we guessed the conceit early on.
Yeah.
I I mean, oh. I think after the second episode, I'm like, this is House of M.
Yes,
this
exactly.
This is
MCU. Well, they put clues in the first episode.
They did.
It was House of M.
They did. And I mean, for those that aren't familiar, we should take a talk because it is the foundational comic story.
This is kind of what I was getting at was that I was drawn in and loved it because being a comic book fan myself.
Yes.
This one felt more like a comic book than any of the movies ever have.
Yes.
Right. And so I was drawn in.
Yes.
I was like, man, this is like reading a book. An episode, each episode was like reading a book.
I made the exact same notes, and this came up when we talked Logan.
Yeah.
Is this also, I made the same note in my notes, as I'm like, this feels like a comic book, like a serial.
Yes.
And that it's building to something. And I like the idea that we don't know what at first.
Yes.
I mean, having a background and knowledge of Wanda's story, particularly Brian Michael Bendis's House of M story.
It definitely helps.
Is foundational. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, this is basically that story written away that fits into the MCU.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because there's no mutants yet. Well, as far as we know. Right, they might write them into it, whatever. Point is, there's none now, so she can't, you know, change mutants. But it's her, it was the way of her changing her world,
mm-hmm.
right? Because in House of M, she changes the whole world. But that
should I run through it quick?
Sure, you can.
Okay, the base for those synopsis. Of you who are familiar with WandaVision but not House of M, about 15 years old now. It was a Brian Michael Bendis story, art by Olivier Coppel, also whose art I love.
Yep.
And his X-Men 600 alternate cover is the one you bought me for Christmas.
Yep, that's right.
That hangs in my bathroom. But anyways, so Wanda is going through a period of grief because she had lost her mind in a battle, and this isn't House of M. She had killed the Vision, and I think Ant-Man, Hawkeye. Is it Hawkeye too?
Hawkeye.
Yeah, Hawkeye in a battle, and in order to cope with the grief, she was creating alternate realities and visions for herself, and was losing her mind. And Magneto had to bring in Xavier to be like you. And Xavier couldn't even help her. So they had to have like a summit between the Avengers and the X-Men that they're like, we need to maybe put her down.
Yeah.
And it was.
Or try to.
And Pietro, Quicksilver, went to her and is like, you have the power to remake the world. So why not remake the world that we want? That's revealed way later that he did that. But like, so she created a world where the mutants actually were in the ascendancy. Her father, Magneto, achieved his dream of being the big boss.
Yep.
And humans were the subjugated people.
Yeah.
And the fallout of all of that, like, I mean, the way the story goes is Wolverine, of course, because it's always Wolverine, knows that something is amiss in the world.
Something's not right here.
Yeah. He finds Layla Miller, who's a mutant's power is she knows, like, she knows things is her mutant power. Her mutant power is to know that the world was wrong.
Yeah.
You know, which
pretty
is...
much.
Wow, what a...
It's a MacGuffin.
Okay, anyways, that's the nice thing about mutants. If you need a plot device, you could just create a power.
Yeah.
And you're like, right? But anyways, they figure it out. They go to attack Genosha where Magneto's having a ball. Wanda's there with her kids. Her kids are actually, they're the name the same, Tommy and Billy, as they are in WandaVision. And then Wanda goes, no more mutants. And the fallout of that is the decimation storyline.
That's right. It flips to the total opposite.
Yeah, but... the key point is Wanda remakes the world out of grief.
Yeah.
And that is the core of this show.
Yes.
And they kind of run with it in a different way. They tell a love story.
Yeah.
Which works incredibly well.
Yeah.
Incredibly well. This show does a lot. It does a lot of interesting things.
Yes.
And it wasn't given credit for that, I think. In even all the reviews that I read, I was kind of like, I don't know if we're watching the same show. Like,
yeah. Well, I think, to my point, I think a lot of people just didn't get it, especially at first. They just didn't get it. They were like, you know, they're not fighting bad guys.
Yeah, we kind of have the gift of the background, right?
Yeah. And then, so the other thing with that gift that they had, being that this is episodic, they played with the audience so well.
I
think that was part of the genius of the show, because a lot of people, they knew that us as the audience, every episode was going to guess. We're going to be like, oh, obviously it's, you know, said Mephisto.
Have you ever seen a show as self-aware and metatextual as this show?
No, exactly.
I never have.
And they were playing with the audience.
Yes.
And don't forget, this wasn't like they were filming it, watching the reviews and stuff, and then making another episode. They made it all knowing what we were going to guess and think.
Yeah.
They played with the audience so well.
So well. And I mean, there's a couple instances that we're going to get into when when we talk about that. Right. But so, I mean, to me, thematically, this is one of the strongest shows that I've seen in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
I was so impressed when it came out. I was like, if this is what the MCU is going to look like, then more of this.
Oh, absolutely.
And I also like, because right after, because we started out talking about Endgame. Endgame is the big Marvel story.
Yeah.
Or not Endgame, but like Infinity Gauntlet finale. Story is the big story. You just told the biggest story in the history of the House of Ideas.
Yeah.
This is a perfect time to hit a hard reset and tell a quiet personal story.
That's right.
And what better one is to explore a grief story, a love story like Wanda goes through in this show?
No, it was the perfect show at the perfect time.
I think it was.
I really think it is. Like you said, it's a reset for telling those more personal stories as opposed to the big, huge epics. Now, this show, as much as it is a sitcom, a light, you know, family sitcom, like that's kind of a false front. It's actually a very epic, big story with even more epic implications in the future, right?
Well, this is a show of contradiction and paradox.
Yeah.
Of big and small, serious and silly, you know, like there's so much
going on
here, like more than it is incredibly intellectual too. Yeah. And it demands so much of people. And I think that it was different.
Yes. It's very much different.
It's different. You know, the fact that we don't really even get into the plot proper until the fourth episode of the show.
Yeah, that's right. Their original intention was to release the first three episodes together. Now, they released the first two. The third one wasn't quite finished. But they were going to release the first three because in four, that's when it's the big reveal, right?
Yes.
And they were going to
almost treat the three like a movie.
Yeah.
And then go forward. Exactly. That would have been good, too.
And it goes back to the whole thing with them playing with the audience.
Yeah.
Because the big reveal at the end of three is... when she comes out, she's like, it was Wanda all along. Like, for the first three episodes, you don't know what's going on.
That's like Twin Peaks shit.
Yeah, because they're kind of implying that...
You know, it just flips everything on its head all of a sudden.
They're kind of implying that it's happening to Wanda, like maybe she's imprisoned. Because they play with the fact that you have knowledge of, like, you know Vision is dead. So when you see Vision, you're like, wait, what's going on?
You're like, whoa, I don't understand. Whoa. Like, I don't get
the show starts and they're in the 50s. It's not like... Like, you know, they flash back to it where she comes to this small little town and has their house and then creates everything.
Yeah.
They don't show that. They just show you're in a 50s sitcom and you're like, what is going on? And Vision's alive. You're like, what is going on here? But they give you all these hints that something is amiss. Something is wrong.
Oh, yeah.
They give you a lot of little hints.
Very subtle.
And it's very subtle. But
very
it's
subtle.
In a very clever way.
Yes.
And so, and then going into the second episode, same thing. That one's more along the line. The only difference is the Vision himself is like, what's going on here?
No, he eventually starts to slowly cotton.
In the third episode, he finally acknowledges, he's like, something is wrong. And Wanda's like, no, it's not. She's like, no.
I don't know what you're talking about, man.
Yeah, yeah.
All good in the hood over here.
I don't know what you're talking about, man. And he's like, but, you know, you're pregnant somehow and you're giving birth already. And she's like, yep, so that's normal.
Right?
Don't ask questions.
And he's like...
He's like, okay. I have a big brain, but it doesn't seem to be working.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I don't know, something. He's like, okay.
Yeah. Mm. Well, in the first episode, right from the first episode, he's toeing the line because, I mean, as we know later, he's been created by Wanda. But
yes,
basically, he just knows... He doesn't know his past or anything. He just knows what he knows. But they've come to this town. They have superpowers, and they're supposed to be blending in and hiding them.
Well, he is... You know, like he has the tabula rasa. He's, you know, like,
yeah,
but we only know that with that again, like you said, we only find that out
way later.
Right. So he's kind of dropped in the mystery box the same as we are.
Exactly. He's kind of the voice of the audience. He's figuring it out as he goes.
Like I said, you and me were a little privileged in that we're familiar with the other elements.
Yeah.
Like, cause this story does borrow quite a bit from House of M, and it was the right story to tell for Wanda, given where we left her at the MCU. Yes. Right? Like at the end of Endgame. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, this is so thematically strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is, to me, the perfect jumping off point to really get things going.
And I mean, okay, well, let's speak about the theme since you're touching on it here. I mean, the main theme that is built around is grief in general.
Yes.
Like, we're focused on Wanda's grief, but it's the whole show goes through the five stages of grief.
Yes.
Right?
The famous Kubler-Ross cycle.
That's right. Yeah. And it goes through it very clever, like it's very, 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 very much clear, so. but
you can see it.
You can see it very clearly.
You can see it.
The moments, right?
Yeah. It explicitly refers, like, you know, even in the episode where Wanda doesn't get out of bed and she's depressed, yeah. Malcolm in the middle episode.
Yeah.
Modern Family episode.
Modern Family. Well, yeah. So let's go through right from the start.
Yes,
let's
back up here. Of course.
Like we're Wanda with the beekeeper. Okay. So let's go. Stage one of grief, right, is denial.
Is denial.
So very first episode, they roll into this town and they're, you know, I mean, like Vision's alive and everything's hunky-dory. Mm-hmm. Nothing's, and they're all their problems are very small. Like they can't remember what the heart on the calendar is
they
for.
They are classic sitcom problems. Yeah, 50s. It's having your boss come over for dinner at the new job.
That's right.
It's having to bullshit your way through the magic show.
Yeah.
You know, or dealing with the queen bee in the neighborhood, you know, like
Dottie.
At the fundraiser. Shout out to Emma Caulfield, by the way.
Which, okay, I was going to mention this later, but like things like that was also genius because they set her up to seem like a villain.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And also by getting an actress like Emma Caulfield, who we know from Buffy and like, we're like, oh, she could possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
They played with our minds because right away we make that connection. And they know that we're going to make that connection. So just by putting her in there, we're like, oh, she could be the bad guy because she's been in those sort of like roles before.
That, or conversely, not exactly the same. You could also say for Deborah Jo Rupp.
Yes.
Who was Kitty on that 70s
That's
show.
That's right. Yeah.
You're like, these are known TV faces.
Yes.
Right? Like, so they even brought people who have been stars on other television shows into their television show about television shows.
Yeah, which is super meta.
Like this is the most meta show for other reasons we will get into. But you're right, the problems are small. They are very Dick Van Dyke, I Love Lucy.
Yeah, the first episode was definitely Dick Van Dyke.
Problems.
I Love Lucy, and the second one was based on Bewitched.
Well, yeah, based on Bewitched.
I just want to throw that out there as we're going through.
We'll give the
the props to the shows that kind of used. So the first one, like I said, is denial. And so the first two episodes is very much like that, right? Like they're trying to blend in and it's like everything's normal.
Yes.
They're trying to just be normal. It's normal. Don't ask questions. Right. And the second one is anger.
Yes.
And that happens at the end of the third episode.
Yes.
When
exactly.
As soon as what's her name? The new Captain Marvel. Well, she's not going to be Captain Marvel, but she'll be
Monica Rambeau.
Yeah, Monica Rambeau. Yeah.
Yeah.
As soon as she's like, oh, yeah, that's right. She's like, because Wanda's the one offhand. She's like, I'm a twin. Like, it comes to her brain.
Yes.
Like, she gives birth to twins and she's like, I'm a twin. And then she's like, and then Monica Rambeau, it clicks in her head. She's like, right, he was killed by Ultron. And she's like, what did you say? And then she's like, snaps, right? And kicks her out of her little world.
It literally, exactly, is the death of denial.
Yes, that's right.
And what is Wanda's response?
Anger.
It's anger.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly.
She's accepting. She's right. Yeah, Pietro died. Like, and then, like you said, then she gets angry and, you know, Monica gets the thing. And then she's thrown out and right away she's like, it was Wanda all along, which, you know, is a misdirection. It's mm-hmm. Wanda, but she's not evil. Right. At that point, they're setting her up to be this like, oh, she's going to be the next villain kind of thing. Right.
Yes.
Which is very intelligent. Also, they're playing with the audience once again.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, this is also the episode where Vision's figuring it out.
Yes.
Right. And he's talking to Herb, the neighbor, and Herb's like cutting the fence or whatever with the hedge trimmer. And he's like, hey, I think you're making a mistake there. And he's starting to piece together like, okay, she got pregnant and had kids in like 2 days. Like something's not right here.
Not just in the plot action and the dialogue. Like Vision remarks something to the fact, like he makes the exact remark that he says that all the world's a stage, which is the famous Shakespeare line from As You Like It.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's like, there's just a like circularness to this show.
Yeah.
You know, but I sorry to derail you because you're talking about the plot cycle and the five stages of grief.
It's all good. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we're in the anger there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the next episode, right? Where the drone, or is it the one after?
I think it's the one
after. Because the next, I was just going to get
Hayward sends in the drone and they're going to nuke her out, right?
That's right. And then, and that leads into the next cycle, right? Of bargaining.
Yes.
Because she rolls out with the drone and she's like, you leave me alone and we're not going to have a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, this is cool. Like, I know that like Vision's dead, but here he's alive and we're cool. So just leave us alone.
And she's like, bargaining. Look, this is
she's literally bargaining.
She's like, this is the deal. I'm not hurting anyone.
Yeah.
And Hayward's like, business. That's actually not true.
Yeah.
You're hurting an entire town of people.
Right.
You just don't really get it yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're lost in the misery of your grief.
Yeah, and she doesn't realize that she's putting that on those people either.
No.
That's part of it, too.
No, it's a slow burn for her.
Yeah.
But then you're right. You're like, you know, like they have the Halloween episode and things kind of flip. And then she reaches the depression stage.
That's right. Yeah. So the next step four is depression. And you're right. The Modern Family.
Yep.
So actually, well, okay. So we were going to talk about the episode. So so episode four isn't a sitcom show.
No.
It's an MCU movie show.
It is.
The aspect ratio even changes back to.
Yes, of course.
To the long, to the widescreen, right? Which is, we'll get into that in a minute. But but anyway, the
cinematography alone could be an entire episode.
That's not a sitcom. And then we get into the next one, which is where they have Vision and her have the argument, and the kids grow themselves up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Family Ties episode.
Yes, the Family Ties.
Right? The opening is like just straight up Family Ties.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Well, they did such a. The design of the home is so incredibly strong.
Yes.
That it was able to. I was able to identify the show that was supposed to replicate almost immediately.
Just by looking at it.
Like the Brady Bunch, the Family Ties. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, right.
Because
yeah.
I've been through all those shows.
The Brady Bunch. We didn't mention that one either. You're right. Yeah. The third episode was Brady Bunch.
Yes.
Yep. And then, yeah. So Family Ties. And then the next one is the Malcolm in the Middle. When they reintroduce the brother. Pietro.
Yep. Yeah, Pietro right? comes back.
And we'll gloss over that for now. We'll get back. We'll circle back.
That is another whole episode.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then Malcolm in the Middle. And then on to the Modern Family, which is where we're at. So yeah, exactly. She stays in bed and she's like, just wants a day to herself and she's clearly depressed, right?
Clearly depressed.
In her pajamas the whole time, doesn't want to leave the house.
She says things like, sometimes life is just a black hole, or, you know, like
yeah.
I am.
Yeah. And she sends her
kids
off. She
was already starting that, though, Agnes. At the fair, talking with Pietro, is that she's like, there's nothing. There's nothing at the bottom.
That's true. Know?
The depression stage is long.
Yes.
And it's very dark at times.
Yes.
You know, like there's a real, this is a post-ironic, super ironic show at the same time. It's very, there's so much paradox in this show, but that discussion of, and then of course, you know, sorry to derail you again, but the discussion of depression and then finally the acceptance.
Finally the acceptance, which is obviously the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they go through it so smoothly.
It is meticulous.
Yeah.
You see those stages of grief.
Very clearly.
Like, whether or not you prescribe that as a viable psychological construct, the actual five stages of grief, it is a very novel and interesting way to tell a story, to do a narrative story cycle. But the clear thing is you can see it.
Yeah.
And that was the cool thing.
Their vision was very clear. I didn't mean that bad pun. I'm sorry.
But
their vision was very clear and they nailed it. That's the thing. They were like, they set they out to show the five stages of grief. And it's perfect. Like I said, you can clearly see every single one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I mean, a lot of the MCU is about the heroic ideal.
Yeah.
About doing what is necessary or facing, you know, like the odds or whatever. Well, whatever you might consider the traditional heroic idea. But also working through grief is also a very heroic ideal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's part of it is... How do you get through that, right? People just expect her as being an Avenger to all of this stuff happen to her. And they're just like, well, you should just be okay with it because you're a hero.
This is a different kind of hero's journey story, though.
Exactly. Yeah. This is, well, it's very personal.
Like yes. It's just personal. Earlier. It's not epic. It's personal.
Exactly.
And that's very cool. I'm like, you just told the most epic story that you have.
Yeah.
Do it on a small personal scale, right? Like, yeah, this show, like there's just so many things to talk about this show. I'm glad we did that because there's this foundation, this base that's just absolutely magnificent. But again, it's weirdly that the show needed a kind of gravitas.
Yep.
And that had to come. It all falls apart without Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany, and they're magnificent in this show.
Well, I mean, they got two, they're gifted two real stars. You know what I mean? Like, it's a small show. Like you said, it's a smaller story.
Yep.
It's only a handful of episodes. And you're gifted these two magnificent actors, right? Like, I mean...
They are so absurdly good in this.
Yeah, exactly.
Absurdly good. Like, this isn't the kind of stuff that wins awards, but, like...
Well, she won something for it, didn't she?
Did she? Won?
Yeah.
And not an MTV like bullshit award?
No. Like I think it was a real one, like whatever TV show awards are. I don't follow those.
So no,
like
me neither. I have no idea who
Emmys
wins
or
things.
Something. She definitely won something for it.
But good. That's good.
I mean, that's good. Like I said, I don't follow those, so I don't know. But
I mean, this is something the internet has explored. But I also noticed when I watched this show is that at times the writing is so incredibly good.
Yeah. Well, the whole time it is.
I would disagree.
Really? There's so many things in this that blow me away, that minor details. I guess maybe not all the writing, but
not
just
in the on the Wanda side.
Yeah.
On the other side, we'll call the real world side.
Right. Okay.
Things can be clunky sometimes.
I guess so. Yeah. It's trying to, but I think part of that is they're trying to get through the story, because
that's the thing.
They're trying to move the plot.
That's exactly it. Is they kind of has to do some work.
It has to do a lot of work. They're trying to move the plot in a very limited amount of screen time.
Yeah, and I have some gripes about that.
So I get that.
About the way it's executed. But I mean, like,
yeah.
That's the only real thing that elevates this from not being like a 10 out of 10 show to still a 9 to 9.5 for me. But on like the television side, like, I mean, Vision has one of the, maybe the line of the year.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, yeah.
In writing, like, as somebody who has studied, okay, here's me rubbing my hands together. I mean, I have a bachelor's degree in literature, you know? So, I mean, like, I don't want to toot my own too much, but I mean, I spent years and years of my life writing papers about great works.
Yeah.
And so when I hear a sentence that, or, you know, like some dialogue, like, well, what is grief but love persisting? That's word porn for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just like, whew.
Well, they knew they had to have something, because
that's special.
They knew they had to have a line, like you said, with that gravitas.
Yeah.
Because they were like, Vision has to be able to say something to comfort her when she's in such a dark place. Because this was supposed to be just after Pietro died, right?
Yes.
And she was in a new country all alone, didn't have, like, her parents are dead, her brother is dead, she doesn't know anybody, right?
She doesn't have anything.
And Vision's just, like, intrigued by her, because he's like, I'm a person, I don't have anything either.
Well, he's not, like, is he a person? That's a big question,
well,
too.
Yeah.
Of but this show.
I just mean, that's his thing. He's like, I'm just becoming a person. How about that? He's like, I'm new. He's like, I don't have anything either. I don't know.
He literally says, he's like, I have never had anything to lose. I, you know, like, I don't understand grief because and it just adds this extra layer of sadness to this show, though, because she loses Vision too.
Yes.
Right. So it kind of makes all the plot action where she would go to the lengths of this, even on a subconscious level, that it would bubble out of her. You're like, plausible, you know? Yeah.
Exactly.
To get lost in her grief that way and set the whole thing off, you're like, I kind of see it.
Yeah.
You know, like, to be, some might call it narcissistic, but not able to see outside yourself, but you have to construct this world in order to deal with, because this is somebody who's known nothing but loss and trauma.
Yeah. Well,
and she finally had something good in Vision, and, well, A, she had to kill him.
Yeah.
B, that got rewinded immediately
and
then didn't
had to
matter.
Watch him be killed.
And then watch him be killed.
Yeah.
And it was all for nothing for a long time anyway.
Well, that's true too.
You know, this is this show, man. Like, I worry that, because it's very intellectual.
Yes.
There's a lot of,
that's
big,
what you were talking about, actually, was the, you were talking about the line.
Oh yes. Yes. Of course.
About love persevering.
But it's true. You know, like, and it fit perfectly.
Yeah.
And it fits the end of the show perfectly.
Yeah.
Because Vision says himself, he's like, well, I've manifested in all these sorts of ways, right? Like,
yep.
And it kind of makes you feel like their story isn't finished.
Yeah, well, they did that on purpose.
They
did
do it on purpose.
With hope, like, oh, she's going to bring him back again.
Well, I mean, you got
to be fair, Vision is out there.
He is out there.
There's now, because now the white Vision is there, right?
Yeah.
So they've reanimated Vision without the Mind Stone, and now he has his memories.
Yeah.
Whether he has the feelings or not, that's a whole other side thing. If you know the comics, then
yes
it may not turn out well, but the point is that he's out there somewhere, because even when they have their confrontation, the two Visions, and they talk about Theseus's ship, right?
Oh,
as soon as he gives him his memories, he's like, oh, I'm Vision now, because I'm the body and I have the memories, and he takes off, and then you're like, where'd he go?
It's really funny, because somebody clearly is, you know, done some homework or whatever, right? I'm like, how cool is it to do the ship of Theseus thought experiment with two people who are literally the ship of Theseus?
They literally are, yeah. exactly.
Talking to themselves. It's like the ship could reason with itself and try to figure out what it is.
Yeah, which of us is the ship?
Yeah, which of us is the ship?
Or neither of us the ship.
See, that to me is just incredibly intriguing, smart writing.
And that's why I said the writing is so good in this.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Yeah, at times it absolutely shines. Like when I was baffled at how good that was at that scene. I'm like, oh my God, I love this. Yeah. As somebody who that kind of stuff, you know, tickles my intellectual balls, I'm like, I love that. I love that stuff. Right. I'm like, oh my God, the ship of Theseus thought experiment. Oh my God. Like, you know, like,
I know.
Because it is an incredibly interesting question. And it's, I mean, what does an AI person look like? You know, like, or what fundamental concepts make a thing a thing? Like, this show asks those kind of questions.
It does. It takes, exactly. That's the thing, is such a small, silly show. Like, it's supposed to be like a personal small show. It has all these huge ideas in it.
Like, if you could watch this show, oh God, I don't want to really use this metaphor, but it's layered like an onion.
Like an onion.
You know, the Shrek metaphors. But like, you could get at it at those levels, right? And yeah, I think if you're watching it, you're like, I don't really get this show where they're just kind of in these old sitcoms. Well, I don't know how valuable it's going to be to you.
Yeah. But, and like, that's why I said, like, I think a lot of people didn't get it.
Yeah.
They kind of watch it and they just saw the surface, the sitcom shows, and they're like, well, I could just watch Bewitched if I wanted to watch this. And it's like, well, no, they're using that as a vehicle for the show.
Like, a lot of things in the show, you don't realize this till later, or it's not told to you later. Yeah. That's the way Wanda escapes from reality and deals with grief.
Yeah.
From the shittiness in her life is by watching sitcoms.
That's right. I was going to say, that's how they explain it. Like, back even in Sokovia.
Yes.
That's what she did. She got away from that by relating to sitcoms.
Like, it literally happened, and we know this, that her parents died, her apartment was reduced to rubble by a Stark Enterprise bomb.
Yeah.
You know, like...
The Toastmaster.
And they were... Yeah. Was it Dick Van Dyke they were watching at the time?
Yes.
Mary Tyler Moore?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that's always been a go-to for her. So it makes sense.
It's a comfort.
It's her comfort. So it would make it sense that it manifests that way.
Exactly.
When her powers get out of control. That all makes sense in terms of the arc, right? Like, it's...
We were just talking about how people didn't get it.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But because it's... They didn't give themselves a chance. So this is what I was talking about earlier. Was how I was saying that being a comic book fan, I know that little things... Right now, they don't explain, are coming later. They'll explain it later. It's a reason. There's a reason.
Unless it's a red herring.
There's a lot of those in this show.
Yes, there are.
They do that in comics as well, but that's the intrigue.
Yes, of course.
Because you're like, oh,
what
is
counts?
This important? Is
What's
it not important? Important? Like, that's a big part of it, and it's intriguing. To me, that's interesting. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to find out the next thing. Like, whereas a lot of other people discount those things, gloss over them, and they're like, well, then it's boring. And you're right. If you ignore all the hints, whether they're red herrings or not, then you're like, it's just a regular
show. Like, a lot of great shows, the second watch is way different than the first
watch. Way, way, way different.
Like, the second watch, absolutely. For me, I had to absolutely pay 100% attention to everything that Agnes said.
And it's so obvious.
It's so obvious.
The first time you watch it through, you're like, oh, right.
Well,
and then, there's hints throughout it. And knowing, again, reading comics, knowing the history, that she was probably Agatha all along.
Yes.
That was what I suspected right from the start.
Yes.
And then if you watch, again, on the second viewing, you're like, it's so obvious.
It is.
They throw out huge hints.
Even in the first episode, like when they first, you know, they meet and Agnes is like, charmed.
Yes.
You know, like she's like, well, those boxes aren't just going to float themselves.
Yes.
Or, you know,
she
like,
makes all these hints.
Yeah. There's so many hints.
She also talks about them having kids.
Yes.
She's like, you don't have a husband. And she's like, no, I do have a husband. And she's like,
a human husband?
Yeah, exactly.
Like she, and you're like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. She knows what's up.
Yeah.
She knows what's up.
Yeah.
But it's subtle enough because like I said, you dropped in the mystery box. You have no idea what's going on. It's very different. It's so different. And that is another hallmark of good writing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and that again, that's part of the show. And then when they reveal that it was her, she has her own little theme song and everything.
Yeah.
That was them like rubbing it in your face. You're like, we told you.
You're like, dude, it was
her all along. We showed you. How did you not figure it out?
You know, like,
it took a theme song for you to figure it out.
Wait, in this whole town, Agatha found the dead dog.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, come on. And there's so many times where it's like, you are just an element of chaos and you're specifically saying shit to try to make Vision figure it out.
Yes. She was, that's the thing. She, the whole time she was egging Vision on.
Always. There
She's
was
like,
that
I gotta
subtext.
Get him to figure it out so that she gets out of her funk and gives me her magic.
Yes.
I want that magic.
She's like, she gotta get that magic.
Yeah. Like that shark.
Yeah.
Snacking on yo magic.
Oh, yo magic shark. Okay, very briefly, I wanted to touch on this too, because this show deals with it, like we talked about grief extensively, but also the idea that trauma bubbles up.
Yeah.
That's why I love the use of commercials in this show.
Yeah.
Is that it specifically references points in the MCU and the course of the movies that were traumatic or terrible for Wanda.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I'm sure you're familiar with the Freudian idea of the ego, the superego, or the id. Whether or not you discount Freud, and most do, in modern day psychology, there's always the idea that the trauma manifests in your behavior in unseen ways.
Right.
And that was the commercials.
That's exactly what it was, yeah.
Yeah, which is, again, very clever.
Very, very clever. Because,
you know, like,
that's
whether
the other
it's
thing
Strucker is- or Stark Enterprises yeah. or Lagos, these are moments that we, you know, like Hydra, obviously, moments we've seen where that are formative. And a lot of them they go through at the end of the show of what has built Wanda in this current situation.
Well, again, she's going through all this grief.
Yes.
Even though she doesn't even realize that's what was going on.
Yes.
Right? Like she's broadcasting this show.
Yes.
Like she's doing all this and she doesn't even realize, like you said, she's hurting these people. She doesn't realize
there's that underneath.
It's
the
her
glacier,
dealing. And so those, like you said, those things bubble up.
They bubble up.
That's her way of like dealing with those specific grief things.
Yes.
And
it is that energy has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's the first law of thermodynamics. It's you know, like if energy can't be created or destroyed, it just manifests, changes shape.
Becomes commercials.
Right? Yeah. Like, that's the other thing. This is actually a weirdly scientific show.
Yeah.
You know, like the conceit of the show is that the reality that she's created manifests as this broadcast television show.
Yeah.
The physics of it kind of makes sense. Kat Dennings' character, which I'm that's cool that they brought her back.
That is very cool. She didn't ever think she was even going to be in an MCU movie again.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. But her character was actually a good fit.
Very good fit.
Yeah. Because, I mean, dealing with Thor's stuff, that's where science meets the magic.
That's right, yeah.
You know, so she's has an experience with this already, right? But
she
also
fits in because another sitcom actor.
True.
Popped into WandaVision.
Oh, yeah, good point. I didn't even think about that. But her discussion of, you know, like cosmic background radiation, which I'm not going to get into because that's a different story. Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know if you know how television works, but it's essentially, you know, like electronic impulses sent through, you know, like a medium and then received on the other side. And if you're remaking reality, there's going to be a radioactive fallout.
That's
there.
Right. Yeah.
It actually makes complete sense that it would manifest as, because it's radio waves.
It's exactly.
That's the metaphor.
It's
like
radio
waves. It's essentially radio waves manifesting in visual form. So why wouldn't that make a television show?
Yeah.
Why couldn't they be able to experience it as a television show on the outside? Because she's remaking reality.
Yeah. But she also edits it. So she
does.
On some level, she knows she's making a sitcom because she edits what they see.
Yes. And the first few episodes when you're still not, you know, they haven't pulled the veil back yet. That's why it's so fascinating and why Elizabeth Olsen is so good in those episodes.
Oh yeah.
Is because you can kind of see her like, this isn't right.
Yeah.
Or I need to fix this.
Well, okay.
There's specific cinematography that fixates not on her, where if you pay attention to her, because she's not the plot action.
Yes.
She's like, I have to do something here.
Yeah. Well, the big thing. Yeah, exactly. The big thing is in each episode, she acts as if she was in that era too. She fits in the most. Like in the first episode, she acts like a 50s sitcom
Very much
actor.
So.
And
Very
the next
much
one,
so.
She acts like she's in Bewitched. But like you said, there's moments where she's outside of that. very yes. clearly. She's like regular modern day Wanda. So you know that it's an act. Whereas everyone yeah. else doesn't break character.
No.
They're in their character of in the 50s. Even Vision is kind of like he's kind of like he is in the 50s. Kind yeah. of the straight man. And yeah. then in the 60s, he's a little goofier, obviously. He acts kind of drunk with the gum thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, in the first episode, Deborah Jo Rupp, though, she's like, fix it.
Yes.
Or whatever she said. Or stop it.
Stop it in a joking way. But like, in a like, no, please. Like,
but then.
Stop.
She slowly transitions, you know, and there's these fissures, these cracks that yes. kind of get these, gives these hints to the conceit. Yeah. And you kind of understand what's going on. You're well, like, she literally goes from like, stop it, to Wanda, you're the one can.
Yeah.
Like, stop. Save his life.
Stop killing him.
Stop killing him.
Yeah.
You know, and my fake sitcom husband that you constructed in your bubble of reality.
Yeah. Here, right? And in like, that, and in that moment too, Vision also is like looking at her like, what do I do? Like, what do we, like,
well, he doesn't know the script.
He doesn't. Exactly.
He doesn't have the script.
That's what I'm saying. He's not reacting. Like, no real Vision would be like all on it. He'd be like, I'll save this guy.
Well, of course.
But he's just like looking at Wanda like,
he's like,
this well, isn't what we're supposed to be doing.
And she's like, well, you save him. And he goes, okay.
Yeah. And then he does yeah. his thing.
And then he does his thing.
And right? then he pops back up and he's like, look at the time. Like, time to, like, back to 50s script, right?
Yeah. 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 Like, I got to be honest, I'm getting thirsty.
Let's take a break. Everybody, refill your beers.
Mm.
Take a pee break. Maybe log on to Instagram, beers.n.banter.mc.
Mm. Yeah, and see you in a couple weeks.
We'll see you in a couple weeks. Make sure to refill those beers.
Yep.
Talk to you later.